It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We explore stories of veterans that come to life through the My Life, My Story program. Launched in Wisconsin over a decade ago, it's now spread to dozens of VA medical facilities nationwide. Writers seek out veterans in the hospital and ask about their lives. And the story write-ups become part of the medical record for the healthcare team to see a patient in new ways. Call in with questions about this project and how to interact with veterans. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Seth Jovog is a writer and editor for My Life, My Story. Seth, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, glad to be here.
Good morning. And Thor Ringler is project director and founder of this project. Thor, welcome.
Thanks, Kate. Happy to be here, too.
So, Thor, how does weaving a veteran's personal story into their electronic health records, how does that impact their medical care?
Well, I think one of the key ideas about the project is that though we have a lot of health information in veterans' medical records in their chart at the VA, we don't know a lot about them personally. And so if you're new to meeting a veteran, if you haven't been a provider for him or her for, you know, many years, you won't have that background information. And so the idea behind the story is to actually sort of flesh out the person a little bit, give them insights into what matters to them in their lives, in the people they know, in their relationships, and in the things that they've been through in their life. And that will give providers background on the person who they're meeting, maybe for the first time, but also give them ways to connect with them and talk about, bring up conversations and small talk and even have deeper conversations.
After all these years, are you still surprised by what the veterans tell you, what they choose to say about their life and their story?
Yes, I am. I would say that I still love going to work each day because I will hear a new story from a veteran and I'm always surprised. So it hasn't gotten old over time at all. So,
Seth, walk us through how you recruit veterans to tell their stories, how this works.
Yeah. Usually what we do, we're in a hospital. So we go up to the inpatient rooms on the floors there, and what we do most of the time is literally just knock on someone's door, and they've never heard of us before, and it's completely new to them. It's kind of spontaneous, and we just introduce ourselves and say what we do, that we're writers at the VA and that we offer to interview vets about their lives and write up a brief life history about them. And we also try to make the point that, this isn't for a public audience. These stories, we're going to interview you and write up a story. And the goal is to get it into your medical record so that their doctors and nurses and healthcare team can get to know them a little bit better. And it's also for them, this is a chance for someone to interview you, write your story down, and give you copies when you're done. And that really resonates with a lot of people because, it's the idea of having your life story written down. To give to your grandkids or kids or friends or whatever. I always try to impress upon them, like, this is an opportunity, that you can be interviewed about your life and someone will actually write it down for you. And of course, when we're doing this, we don't know anything about the person when we go into the room. And sometimes they say no, but a surprising number of times they say yes. That really surprised me when I started working for this project. I wasn't sure if anyone would say yes, to that idea of a stranger coming into your room to ask you about your life.
And you're reaching out and knocking on that door, to veterans in a very vulnerable time. They may be in pain. They may be feeling anxiety about a procedure or a prognosis. What do you make of this timing and having them open up about themselves?
Yeah, you're right. It is a vulnerable time, and sometimes, sometimes they're just in for a knee surgery. Other times people have gotten a very terrible diagnosis, or something like that. So, like I said, it's a big part of our asking them is that they can say no or they don't have to do it. We only want to do it if they want to do it. Mm-hmm. So, sometimes people see this and say, oh, yeah, I am this would be a great time to do this. For one thing, they're often in a hospital room. They are bored. You know, they're sitting there for days on end and they have nothing to do. So someone comes in and asks them to tell about their lives. They might just be like, oh yeah, that's a nice way to pass the time instead of watching reruns on TV. But it is a wonderful time, I think, to do interviews. And it is because I think people are really open to kind of reflecting on their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in a space where they are vulnerable. And I've done a lot of interviews in my life as a reporter, but this is very different, I think. Yeah.
Talking about the My Life, My Story, two leaders of the project, that is Seth Jovog, who's a writer and editor, and Thor Ringler is project director and founder. You can call in with your questions about this VA program, 800-642-1234. We're going to hear some of these stories now. And first up is Harry. Harry was one of around 94,000 Americans who were held as prisoners of war in Europe during World War II. And now these are voice actors, I understand. So let's take a listen.
Turned out that escaping was easy. Most people think of barbed wire and tunnels, but we walked out the main gate with a guard, a donkey, and a cart. They had asked for volunteers for woodcutting, and me and a couple of buddies, George and Wally, offered to go right away. It was the day after Christmas, and it started snowing heavily when we were out in the woods. I told George, I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to take off, because in 5 minutes, they won't be able to find our tracks. I just can't stand this anymore. I started walking away, and all of a sudden, the two other guys were right there with me. The guard was in his 70s, and he didn't want to be there any more than we did. He had a gun, but I don't know that he could lift it. We were on the loose in Poland and Czechoslovakia for the next 5 months. I didn't have a plan. We just left because it was snowing so hard. We wrapped ourselves in gunny sacks we found in barns. We had to forage for food. We ate a lot of rutabagas, which I cannot stand to look at now, and rotten potatoes. That's when we lost most of our weight. When I went into the army, I weighed 165 pounds. When I got out of the prison camp, I weighed 89.
Thor, you were the voice actor for Harry's story. What stands out to you about this one?
I think it was just sort of the randomness of how he and his buddies got out and just decided to leave. And just the thought of them being, you know, behind enemy lines for months, hiding and living on rutabagas. It just gave me like an insight, I think, into how all this stuff that was going on, and also the experiences of the uncertainty, I guess, or the terrific uncertainty of that situation. I mean, certainly, you know, being in the prison camp was nothing good, but being outside was probably much more scary for people, I would think.
Every word was so descriptive, is so rich on details. And Seth, I wonder, you know, as you take down these stories, are you recording them? How do you make sure that you don't miss a really fine detail?
Yeah, we do. We have, we record the interviews, and, you know, as we go, they're not always told very directly. They might go off on tangents, and like all of us, when we talk, we kind of go in circles and come back to this point later. So they may say a bunch of words, you know, 6,000 words or something, but our goal is to try to hone these stories into something about 1,000 words, okay, somewhere around there. So our job as writers then is to take what they say and kind of shape it and make it a narrative that's easy to read, you know.
Seth Jovog there works on the My Life, My Story program as a writer and editor. Thor Ringler has led the VA's My Life, My Story program for a decade now. Call in with your questions, your thoughts about veterans being able to share life stories during a hospital stay. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the IDS Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss the My Life, My Story program that is active in dozens of VA medical facilities around the country, including here in Wisconsin, where the program got its start a decade ago. project is fueled by writers who interview veterans and craft brief life histories with a veteran's permission becoming part of their medical record. Call in about this aspect of healthcare, questions that come up for you, 800-642-1234. Seth Jovog is a writer and editor on the My Life, My Story project, and Thor Ringler is project director and founder. Thor, how do you handle veteran stories when there are cognitive concerns and perhaps dementia present?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kate. So I think, you know, it depends on, it's sort of a case-by-case thing. I know that for sure when a veteran has a healthcare agent or a healthcare power of attorney, we always have to run the story past them and let them know that we're interviewing the veteran before the story can go in the chart. But oftentimes we actually end up interviewing veterans with family members there. And so we can interview vets with a spouse there or with kids or any relative. And oftentimes those become interviews where the family member joins in and adds information or does some slight corrections to the story. I also just want to point out sort of in relation to that, that all the stories that we do are reviewed by the veterans themselves. So they always get a chance to make changes or edits at any point in the process before it would go in the chart.
How have you maneuvered this program through COVID?
Yeah, well, in COVID, we actually pivoted to doing most of our interviews over the phone, some over video. Yeah, so we did a big pivot to phone, and that we basically for 2 years we were doing phone interviews because we couldn't either be in the rooms or volunteers who help with the program and volunteer couldn't be at the VA.
That makes sense, and I would imagine you have a lot of volunteers as well.
Yes, we do. We started with volunteers from Madison. They've actually over the years, our volunteers at the Madison VA and in the Madison community have done over 2/3 of the stories that we've done. We've done over 3,300 stories, and 2/3 of those have been done by community volunteers.
Wow. Wow. That's just really incredible. Let's hear another clip here. This is a story of a young Polish soldier who fought against the Germans during World War II. Her name is Bibiana.
I will start from the time that I changed from a happy girl to a mature teenager. In 1939, I was just 11 years old. We were listening to the radio and heard an alarm. They announced that the German army had crossed the Polish border and airplanes were on their way to Warsaw. And soon we heard the sirens. They started bombing. I was in the Girl Scouts, and the first thing that I did for my country was to put on my armband, go down to the street, stand on the corner, and try to help direct people to safety. The Germans dropped cluster bombs that would burn everything. In those first days, Warsaw was on fire. Many of the children in Poland were scouts like me, but the Germans outlawed the scouts. So we went underground and became part of the home army, the Polish resistance.
That story was read by Jen Plants. Seth, what more can you fill us in about Bibiana's story and what Bibiana relayed?
It's an amazing story, but I am going to turn it over to Thor because I know Thor actually did that interview.
Oh, you did?
And
Thor
has a relation. Okay. Yeah. So Thor should talk about that. It's great. It's one of our favorites for sure.
Yes, this was a surprise for sure, because I walked into a VA hospital room in our short-term rehab ward here at Madison, and there was an elderly lady there who had a Polish accent, and I didn't expect it to be a story about World War II and about her being in the Polish resistance in World War II. So basically for the next hour and a half, I was just kind of on the edge of my seat and history was kind of spilling out in front of me. And it's, I think the amazing thing was that I didn't know this is that veterans, folks who served in Poland for the home army and later became U.S. citizens were granted eligibility for VA healthcare. And that's why she was there. She was using the VA. It was the last person in the world I expected to interview. And her story goes on relating the Warsaw Uprising and her involvement in that and then the ultimate crushing of that by the Nazis. But it's just an amazing story of basically a child soldier in World War II, and just goes to show sort of the breadth and the amazing variety of stories that we get at the VA through this program.
Every door opens up to a new story, a new insight. I'm wondering, you know, Thor, as a poet, how does this work interact, if maybe not, but with your poetry or vice versa?
Yeah, great question. So I think that for me, I've definitely, you know, I came to this work as a poet. I've been writing most of my life and writing poetry mostly. So, and since for the last 10 years, I've been writing stories. So it's been really interesting for me to sort of pivot from, you know, poetry to stories. I mean, I definitely feel like the connecting strand for me is, you know, the power of the voice and the power of people speaking and the language they use, which is, you know, a feature of poetry, but also a feature, I think, of these stories. We definitely, in these stories, try to capture the voice of the person who we're talking to, mm-hmm. and make it seem, as you're reading it, that they're in the room, that you could literally be sitting in a chair and listening to them speak.
Seth, how have you changed as a writer through this work?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I think it's changed my interviewing quite a bit. I think it's sort of that I'd never done interviews like this before. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've interviewed a lot of people as like I said, newspaper reporter, but this is just so different. I think it's because, you know, it's not for a public audience, as I said, it's just for them to have, and people are incredibly open. And unguarded sometimes, not every time, of course, but, and we're not trying to pry anything out of anyone, but I'm just really surprised a lot by how much, this is something I also didn't expect when I started, was how much can you learn about a person in an hour or so?
Sure,
'cause that's usually what our interviews are. And the answer is a lot, a surprising amount. And these interviews, and as Thor said, you know, we read them back at the end of when we're done. We read these stories back to the veteran, usually if we're able to, out loud. And it can just be really emotional.
Oh, you know, I bet hearing it out loud. And I want to hear another one. Toby is Native American, talks about being physically beaten and abused as a child. And what we're about to hear contains descriptions of abuse, so do take care. Toby dropped out of high school to join the Navy while in Vietnam, saw the USS Forrestal blow up.
A missile went off on board and hit a plane which started a fire. We could see them using forklifts to push jets and helicopters into the ocean. They sent us two of their guys to be buried at sea. Seeing those guys in their uniforms lying in coffins with holes drilled in them, it stays in your memory. We headed back to Norfolk after that, and I got out of the Navy. I drove back to Wisconsin with a trunk full of whiskey and rum. I moved close to home, met a girl, and lived with her for 10 years. I was working as a concrete carpenter, and me and my foreman became friends. He came up to my house to go hunting once, and when I woke up during the night, he and my girlfriend were asleep in the bedroom. I had my gun at her temple when she woke up. I came to some sort of realization. I put the gun away and I told him to get out of my house.
That story was read by Todd Cambio. Thor, what role does post-traumatic stress have in the lives of the veterans you interview?
Yeah, I would say it's a feature of many stories, and many of those stories have to do with veterans' experiences in the military, in combat and not necessarily in combat. But I would also say that we talk to people about the span of their lives, and we also hear some pretty traumatic stories from childhood. And so I would say there's a lot of trauma that does come up in these stories. And I think that, as Seth said earlier, I think is really important, we're not looking for hard stories. We don't go to veterans and say, oh, tell us the hardest part of your life. That's not what we do. But we are really interested in knowing what matters to them. And so when those topics come up, when trauma comes up, when PTSD comes up, if the veteran, if that's something that he or she wants to talk about, we stay with that and we honor that space and honor the time and the intention that they're putting into telling that story.
Seth, how do you interact with a veteran as they speak about, you know, these traumas?
Well, I'd say a big part is just being there. And sometimes you just don't say anything. You're just there listening, you know. It can be a really light touch, because like Thor is saying, we're not there to bring anything out. We're just there to be there if they want to tell it. So, you know, sometimes that means get the Kleenex ready, you know, and just be a human with them, and, you know, and make sure they, and if it is tough, if something is really tough, we also offer, you know, like, hey, do you need to take a break? Or, you know, if you don't want to talk about this, it's okay too. But most of the time they do. And, so I think you just react to the person in front of you and try to be there for them and let them tell what they want to say.
Seth Jovag, writer and editor for My Life, My Story, Thor Ringler, project director and founder. Join in with questions and comments about narrative medicine, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Over the past decade, dozens of VA medical facilities signed on to a storytelling project modeled after one created at the VA hospital in Madison. We check in on the My Life, My Story program, which also spread to non-VA hospitals. Its founder, Thor Ringler, has recorded life stories of thousands of veterans, and these short sketches, they become part of a veteran's electronic health record with their permission. And Seth Jovag is a writer and editor on the project. Call in with questions about narrative medicine, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call now. Barbara in Florida is here. Barbara, hi.
Hi. I have a question for your guest. I am the wife of a military veteran who served 20 years. When he graduated from the University of Wisconsin in 69, he was quickly sent to Vietnam, and I was left home with a toddler. As many of the families and wives were of active duty military people, so I wondered if the program had ever considered interviewing those of us left behind. I know my kids, my granddaughters, they love to hear the stories of that year and the other times when their dad was gone a lot. But could the program include those of us that served at home?
Barbara, thank you so much for bringing that up. Thor, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Barbara. That's a great question. And I think, you know, I think a lot of us forget that, as you said, there were those like you who served at home while their husbands or wives or family members were overseas serving the country. I think that's a great idea. And I think that at least within our program, the issue that we'd have doing that is just that we we're a VA program, and we can only interview veterans who are enrolled in VA healthcare. But I love the idea of interviewing the folks who were at home, like yourself. I think that those would be wonderful stories as well. So, you know, feel free to reach out to me about that, and we could sort of brainstorm about how to get that going, and whether there are people who might be interested in doing that.
And elevate the StoryCorps project. And
that's true.
Yes, and the StoryCorps app, where you can record your stories through that national program. And so coming from a public radio perspective, I would love to just add that note there. Barbara, thank you so much for calling in. John now in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to give a shout out to Thor and Seth. I was a medical student. I graduated in 2017. I rotated through the My Life, My Story program, and it was awesome. It was formative in my medical school education. I wish there was a way to make it a required rotation for every medical student. And if there are any medical students listening at the School of Medicine and Public Health, absolutely do the rotation. Do not hesitate. It was an awesome, life-changing experience.
Can you explain how it was formative and what the rotation was like?
Well, we talk a lot about healthcare provider mental health and wellness and well-being. And, you know, it was, I think it was a third year rotation, and the first 2 years of medical school are really tough, you know, and you're sort of stuck in a library, stuck in books, and then you get thrown into rotations where you're sort of focusing on medicine, focusing on learning as much about the human body and medical illness as possible. And sometimes you do lose sight of the bigger picture, and you sort of need to relearn how to see patients as people. And so having a rotation where you come in and all you're required to do is just listen and be with people and not have to be thinking about a differential diagnosis or a way to treat somebody. It was just really refreshing. And then just hearing people's stories and seeing someone not just as a patient that needed to be treated, but as a person that needed to be treated, you know, to treat the whole person and recognize the way that, you know, social determinants and someone's past history affects the way that they're treated in the hospital or treated, you know, in the clinic. It just helped me see the patient as a person.
John, thank you so much. Your perspective, you know, really adds here a dimension to the conversation. Thor, what do you make of that with the rotation aspect of the med students?
Yeah, thanks, John, for calling and for adding that in. Really loved hearing that perspective. Yeah, I think we've been doing this rotation with the med school, the University of Wisconsin Medical School, for the last 7 or 8 years, I think. And basically, we have two med students, either third or fourth years, basically embedded in our program for 2 weeks, doing nothing but interviewing veterans and writing their stories. And I think I can speak for all the med students, or many of the med students who've been through that program, that it's been a profound experience for them to be able to just spend time listening to patients and having them be people rather than just patients. And also just to point out that this idea of using the stories to train isn't quite the right word for medical students. It's more like give them the opportunity to listen closely to patients and through that experience, make that connection that making people more than patients is about the listening part of it. It's only through the listening that they, you know, change in your eyes and your idea of who they are. They become bigger than just what they're in the hospital to get cured or get help with.
I would imagine, too, that time slows down in some respects because medicine is so fast and trying to move in patient care. But just sitting down, slowing down, and being present, I would imagine, is also life-changing.
Yeah, I think that in itself, too, that's a really good point. Spending that time where you're not directed and you're not necessarily looking or trying to find a diagnosis and efficiently treat people and you know, treat them medically and deal with their symptoms and fix their physical being, that time when you're just connecting with them at that human level of listening and listening to their story and learning about them really does sort of reset your brain in a little way, in a good way. Mm-hmm. Reset your brain in a human listening communication kind of way.
We're going to hear another excerpt of a story, and it is a sensitive conversation that contains descriptions of racism and sexual assault. This one does, and it's George who tells his own story about being in Donelson Air Force Base in Greenville, South Carolina.
But what was interesting about Donelson Air Force Base, I would get on a bus on the base that would take us into Greenville. And when I'd get on the bus on the base, I could sit anywhere I wanted to. But when the bus left military property, the sign went up, and blacks had to sit in the back.
Seth, how did the racism that George experienced there affect his perception of the military and what you could unearth in this conversation?
Yeah, I'm glad again that you picked that story. It's one of our favorites. And again, I'm going to turn this one over to Thor because, again, this is one that he did the interview and wrote on. I'll just say, though, that I would like to do that because, boy, when you interview someone and talk to them about these things, you develop a really personal relationship with them. So that's kind of why I'm like, oh, Thor, I'm going to let you field this one, too, because I know you and George have a connection. So.
Thanks, Seth. Yeah, I think when I was speaking with George, I think in this part of the interview that you pulled out was, you know, particularly struck me that George's life on base was different than his life when he walked off that base. And I still can't, I couldn't at the time come to terms with what that meant, that you could be able to sit anywhere on a bus when you were on an Army base, and then the rules all changed as soon as you left. And I think for me, and for, you know, being a white, you know, fairly privileged person in this country, I was just shocked, I think, by the reality of the situation that he grew up in, and not, and even more, I think, impressed, you know, as this, as that story went on, and George had a fantastic life and, you know, was a success in so many ways, both with career and family, just the, his ability to triumph over that type of adversity, over that type of discrimination, was just really moving to me and really inspired me a lot.
Thor, how do you handle conversations when veterans express racism toward Japanese or Vietnamese people?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I would say that we don't get a lot of interviews where people directly express their racist views. I've definitely interviewed folks who say that they have trouble, you know, dealing with people from ethnic backgrounds of countries where they were fighting or were fighting against those people. But it's not, it's usually an acknowledgement of that, that it's, that it's formed there, and they know that it's not necessarily a correct, you know, a correct response. But it's something that's sort of, tangled up in their minds with that time. And I think it's complicated because I do think there's a, you know, there's a training or societal pressure, I would say, and pressure in the military during conflicts to, you know, identify an enemy. And oftentimes that is hard to get rid of once you get out. It stays with you. And so you have to work with that and think about what that means, you know?
I want to bring up Jess's story. She reads, it's titled Talk About Trauma. And let's hear a clip here about Jess's personal experience with trauma.
I served in the Army in Kosovo for 16 months. During my time in the military, every single female was sexually harassed in some way. I was tasked with taking care of EO, equal opportunity, for my unit, which meant a lot of rapes were reported to me. When I would pass them up the chain of command, nothing would ever happen. I would get punished for speaking out and vocalizing my issues with the chain of command.
Another deeply troubling story here. Seth, you know, what surprises you? What comes up as a veteran opens up like this?
Well, it's, I would say these stories, you know, I guess another thing that surprised me just from the very beginning was that we're not sanitizing these at all, right? I mean, people are telling us the good, bad, and the ugly of serving in the military. And that, like anything, it runs the gamut of, from just completely life-altering in wonderful ways to completely life-altering in shattering ways. And, you know, it's sort of like, again, what I said earlier, our job is just sort of be there and listen and be open to hear what they have to say or want to say. And I just love that about this project is that, you know, we're not there to make any institution or any person look good per se. You know, we're just like there to hear what they have to say.
We have the leaders of the My Life, My Story project out of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, Seth Jovog, their writer and editor. Thor Ringler founded the program a decade ago. Still time to ask about narrative medicine in veterans healthcare. What comes to mind for you? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We examine an opportunity for veterans to interact and share life stories using guided interviews. And the result is a short bio that becomes part of their medical record with their permission. Still time for your questions and your thoughts about the My Life, My Story VA initiative and the impact of story-focused narrative medicine. 800-642-1234. Thor Ringler is project director and founder of My Life, My Story, and Seth Jovag is a writer and editor on the project. Thor, the VA is really honing in on telehealth, saying it's transforming how veterans access medical care. And I'm wondering, does this project work with telehealth visits, or is there a future connecting telehealth with this project? Thor, can you hear us? I think we're having...
Sorry, I had muted myself. Apologies. Yeah, great question, Kate. And I would say that, yes, the VA sort of tilt towards telemedicine and televisits has worked really well with our program. And I think I had mentioned that during COVID, we pivoted towards interviewing folks either over the phone or over video, over telehealth. And it's actually a great way to do interviews. And I think the really exciting thing for our program is that it also opens up a lot of doors for us to interview a lot more veterans across the country. Because obviously there are folks who live far from a medical center, veterans who, you know, live 100 miles or more from the VA that they get their care from. So for those folks, you know, giving them the opportunity to be interviewed over the phone or over some telehealth technology, you know, gives them the opportunity to participate in this project that they didn't necessarily have before COVID and before we started using telehealth so much.
Well, let's hear another story. This is from Dr. Evermore, Tom Every, who is well-known in Wisconsin for making these fantastic sculptures from salvage parts and scrap metal. The Forever Tron passed away in 2020. Let's take a listen.
I am a product of the Second World War, and we have a different attitude toward each other. People were nicer to each other back then. They didn't necessarily have everything. In Brooklyn, the American Legion post was a huge part of the town, and in those days, most of the guys were World War II vets. Those vets were dedicated to doing things for the town. They would always put on a Labor Day parade every year, and I'd make a float for that parade. They really brought out the spirit of that little town.
That story read by Todd Cambio. Thor, did you realize in this interview that it was Dr. Evermore?
Yeah, about two-thirds of the way through. First of all, I didn't know that he was a veteran, and I didn't know who it was. And then it dawned on me. I was like, oh, this Dr. Evermore. He didn't call himself Dr. Evermore when I was talking to him originally. So it was just another example of like, oh, my gosh, this is a story about, you know, a well-known Wisconsin figure.
And the Forever Tron wasn't taking the lead here in this story, which is also really interesting.
Yeah, it was fascinating because it was about his experience in the military and also just his he talked in really interesting ways about, you know, how he became an artist, though he didn't call himself an artist, but it was just fascinating to hear his perspective, not coming in as someone knowing him and saying, oh, tell us about your art. Tell us, you know, about, you know, how you do this. But he found his way there. And it was really interesting. He found his way through his life because he was a junk collector as a kid and was always into collecting stuff. And it was just fascinating to see, you know, who he became kind of developing from who he was as a kid as well.
Seth, what happens to a veteran's story after they pass away? Dr. Evermore, you know, died in 2020 at the age of 81.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing changes. You know, it's in their medical record and they have their copies. So, you know, I don't, you know, what people do with the copies once we give them to them is up to them. But we have heard from people many times that they've used these stories or had them displayed at funerals and things like that. And also sometimes we interview people who are in hospice or in, you know, receiving palliative care, and they'll pass away even before they approve the story. So what we do in that case is, you know, after a while, we'll send the stories to the family. Just let them know, hey, you know, your relative was interviewed before they died. We'll explain the story program to them and say, like, this is something for you. And that's been really valuable, as you can imagine, for families when it's like, you know, right before someone passes away.
Oh, absolutely. Talking about the My Life, My Story project out of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Seth Jovag and Thor Ringler. Thor, do you have advice to hospitals that want to launch such a program?
Yeah, I would say that to hospitals that want to launch this, it's extremely doable. And there's many people out there who want to do this kind of work, whether there are volunteers out in the community who want to hear people's stories and write their stories for them, as well as students, healthcare trainees who would really benefit from the experience of doing these kinds of interviews and having these close connections with patients. I think the only thing that they need to know is that they need to put a little bit of muscle into it, just in terms of administering the program. But I think once they go and get started, they'll find that it's, you know, a very successful thing and also very meaningful for not only the patients, but for the staff who read the stories, and in fact, for the whole institution, to realize that, you know, that patients are more to them than just patients, that they really are people. And I think that that's kind of I think everyone knows that that's true, but somehow the stories make it real and make a real statement about who we value and who is important to us, and not just what they're in the hospital for.
What about a potential volunteer who really wants to do this but is nervous about the writing part? You know, might say that they're not a great writer and that maybe they don't have the talent to do this. What would you say?
I think it depends. I think if you're somebody who's, you know, has done any kind of writing in your life, whether that's at school, if you've been to college and, you know, taking classes and written papers for that, I would say that you're qualified to do the writing for this program. I think a lot of people think that, you know, you have to be creative to do these stories, but actually all the content is there after the interview. You have the veteran's words and the patient's words, and you're working with them. So really it's more about editing and pulling stuff together than it is about necessarily being creative or, you know, a great writer. And anyone who can, you know, write a letter, anybody who can write a paper can do this kind of work.
Thank you both for joining us and sharing the program.
Yeah, it's great being here.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, really enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Seth Jovag is a writer and editor for My Life, My Story, and Thor Ringler is the project director and founder. We have a link to the project's site at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.